If you like having Bible study in your pocket and you have an iPhone or iPad, why not leave a review? Search Bible Study Evangelista in iTunes and tell everyone how you're loving and lifting all you've been given. Here's Sonia.
I've been hoping to chat with you. If you haven't connected with Bible Study Evangelista on Instagram, Facebook, or Pinterest, what are you waiting for? And now, it's time to help you love and lift all you've been given. So let's get some Bible study in your pocket.
Did you know you can get Bible Study Evangelista radio notes and podcasts delivered to your inbox every Monday morning? Redeem your Mondays. Join thousands of your fellow listeners by subscribing at BibleStudyEvangelista.com. Now, here's Sonia.
Welcome to the program. I'm Sonia Corbett, the Bible Study Evangelista, and I'm absolutely thrilled that you are going to join me for our series on anger. Possibly a Bible study on anger is not something that you've even thought about, really. What does the Bible say about anger? It actually says a lot. And maybe it's not a Catholic subject per se, but I think you're going to be fascinated, as I have been, on all that God says to us about anger through His people. Throughout the series together, we're going to meet 12 people in the Scriptures that God spoke to about their anger. And I'm somewhat of an expert on the subject because for my entire adult life, God has dealt with me about my own anger. And I have done some crazy things out of it, and I've learned also that the root of it is rebellion. But God used the Scriptures and these people to speak to me about my own anger and how to overcome it. I have thrown remote controls, I have bald tires, I have pushed people off the road in my car, I have put my head through the drywall in the bathroom, and God used the Bible to teach me how to get a hold of my anger so that it did not destroy my family and everything that I was really working for. So the first person we're going to look at in the Scriptures with an anger problem is Cain. And I find that very interesting because Cain was Adam and Eve's son, and so we see very quickly that anger enters the picture of humanity. And in fact, what we'll see with Cain is that sibling rivalry will destroy your relationships and could even lead to murder. My anger story really started with what I call a father wound. And I didn't know it at the time, but my anger really stemmed from that woundedness that I guess would say I received from my father. He was military in two branches and also highway patrol. And so at our house, if we understood anything at all, it was the law. And so there were times that I felt controlled, especially as I got older. And one of the very first victims, I'll call it, of my own angry explosions was my own sister. And of course, I know that siblings tend to do that to one another, but I did have some extreme issues with anger. And so one of the very first things that God used to speak to me was Genesis chapter 4. Cain. And what we find there is that Cain was the older brother, and that was really my position with my sister. I'm the oldest, and we're about 4 years apart. And Cain, you know, we think of this sibling rivalry as a rivalry between Cain and Abel toward their parents, but it was really a rivalry on Cain's part with God. It was Abel and God. And so what we find there in Genesis chapter 4, verses 1 through 9, is that Cain was a farmer and Abel was a shepherd. And I'm going to read part of that passage for you. And as I said, we're going to begin here in Genesis chapter 4. I'm going to read verses 1 through 9. Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain. Cain means to get, or sometimes it also can mean a fast striker, which we'll see as he strikes his brother in murder. But that's what his name means. She conceived and bore Cain and said, I have acquired a man from the Lord, or I got a man from the Lord. So you can see the play on the names. Then she bore again, this time his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was a tiller of the soil. And in the process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord. Abel also brought of the firstborn of his flock and of their fat. And the Lord respected Abel and his offering, but he did not respect Cain and his offering. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. And so the Lord said to Cain, why are you angry? So, dear one, that's a question for us. Why are you angry? And a lot of times anger can be so explosive that we don't know where it comes from. That was what happened to me. But I wouldn't have even necessarily said I was angry. I just, you know, if everybody would just do what I wanted, then I wouldn't be mad. But that's unacceptable. And God really began to teach me that through this passage. But are you angry? And if you are, why? And so God asks us point blank in his word, why are you angry? And why has your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door or crouches. And its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. And that's that sentence there, the phrase, its desire is for you. Its desire is to sift you. And we get that same sifting idea through Jesus and his confrontation with Peter, where he said, Peter, Satan desires to sift you. So what he's doing here is he's teaching us that anger can lead to devastation. And that's actually what happens with Cain. Now, Cain talked with Abel, his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and he killed him. And the Lord said to Cain, where is Abel, your brother? And he said, I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper? And yes, we are our brothers and our sisters' keepers. And so God confronts our anger with that very simple question. Why are you angry? Why has your face fallen? And why are you upset? And in Cain's situation, he was upset because his offering was not pleasing to the Lord. And later on in the scriptures, we see exactly why that's the case. But for us and our intents and purposes, God really wants to know, why are you angry? And let's talk about it. And it's interesting to me that God goes straight to Cain face to face. And that's what God is really doing through the scriptures. He's confronting us and our anger face to face, because the truth is, it's a human emotion, and we are made in God's image, and so it's not necessarily a bad thing to be angry. In fact, St. John Chrysostom says that he who is not angry when he has cause to be sins, because excessive patience, he says, is the hotbed of many vices, and it causes even the good man to do wrong. So anger itself is not bad, but murderous anger, letting it get to wrath, which I had a habit of doing, letting it get to that point, is sinful. And so that's why God confronts us before we do the really bad thing. And of course, Cain here, he went all the way over the edge and he killed his brother. So then it's not anger in and of itself that is the problem. And what we see in Cain is an example of how that can be true. God went directly to Cain. And one of the things that I really loved about doing the original study on these people who experience anger is that God comes to us directly through his word. And that's part of why it's so important to be in the scriptures on a daily basis through the readings of the Mass and the daily readings of the church, because that way we can hear him speak to us about our own issues. But he promises to do that, and he was faithful to me to do that. I had I'm a convert from the Southern Baptist Church, and I had a habit, what we called a daily quiet time. And so I was in the scriptures on a regular basis, and I began this study as I started to realize there were lots of people in the Bible that were angry. And so God, he used those daily studies and those daily readings to speak to me in the same ways that he did his people in the Bible. And he will do you the same way if you're faithful to be in those scriptures. And so what we see through these people is that God is interested in our anger. He's not angry at us for being angry. He just wants us to deal with it properly. And how do we do that? We do it with him and in his presence. He comes to us and he asks us, why are you angry? And we'll find so many questions to so many other people in the scriptures about anger. Why are you angry? Is it right that you're angry? Is it fair that you're angry? Those kinds of questions. And so if we're in the scriptures on a daily basis, we can hear God speak to us about those issues. Because the truth is, we don't always know where the anger comes from. Anger can feel like a strength. I mean, when I did crazy things and tore up stuff, I felt strong. But in the opposite is actually true. When we are out of control like that, we are at our weakest, and it's damaging. And so God is very interested in the roots of our anger, and He knows those roots better than we do. And that's why it's so important to do a series like this, a Bible study, because it's not really spoken about in religious circles or Catholic circles or even Bible study circles. People don't, you know, always share their issues with something like this. And even for men especially, it's sometimes the only emotion they feel comfortable expressing, because it does sometimes feel very, very strong. But for each of us, I remember, I don't even know who said it to me, but someone said to me, "Boy, that's really unladylike." And I thought, you know, but that was one of those moments when I realized, you're right. So Cain then is a great example for us. It's interesting that Jesus actually canonizes Abel, and he does so in a way, it's a confrontation actually that he's having with the Pharisees about their murderous anger. And he brings up Cain and Abel, and he talks about how Abel was killed by his brother. And that's almost prophetic. He's almost prophesying to the Pharisees that they have the same problem. They're jealous. Why? Because Jesus claims to be a son of God. A son of God. They didn't even utter God's name. They would never have dared to call God their father, not in the way that Jesus did. And that's actually why in the Mass we dare to say, our Father who art in heaven, because it was not done. And so they were jealous that Jesus would express a relationship with God that, first of all, they didn't believe was possible, and secondly, that was so intimate. He seemed so friendly with God. And so he confronts the Pharisees in a similar way that God confronted Cain. They were angry. They were murderously angry. They were envious. They were jealous of their brother, Jesus. They were brothers in Judaism. And so we get this parallelism that Jesus, where, as I said, he sort of canonizes Abel. And I'd like to read that little passage, or actually just that one verse. In Matthew 23, verse 34, he says, "Therefore, indeed, I send you prophets, wise men and scribes. Some of them you will kill and crucify, and some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city, that on you may come all the righteous blood shed on the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, whom you murdered between the temple and the altar. Assuredly, I say to you, all these things will come upon this generation." And of course, the Pharisees scoffed at that, but Jesus was really being prophetic. And so what we see is the history of this envious, murderous anger from the very beginning, right after the Garden of Eden. One of the very first sins was a sin of envy, of jealousy, of a brother. And it led to murder. And so my warning, not my warning really, but the warning of the scriptures is we need to confront our anger. We need to admit it, first of all. And then secondly, we need to confront it with God, especially through the scriptures, because God can use those scriptures to really identify the roots of where it's coming from. And it's important. It's important because it's the job of purification, of sanctification. And if we don't do it here, we'll do it in purgatory. And I don't know about you, but I'd like to avail myself of the sacraments and the graces that are available in those and the merits that I can merit while I'm here, so that that work doesn't have to happen in purgatory. But either way, the Bible really warns us that we should be careful to go to God. So in my own life with my own sister, she married before I did. She had kids before I did. Our relationship got a little snarky, and I couldn't really figure out what her problem was. And I even went to God and I said, "What is her problem?" And He used Matthew chapter 5 to say to me, "You need to pull the beam out of your own eye before you start trying to pluck the speck out of your sister's eye." And I just thought, "What?" And it turns out, as I sat with God there in that really honest moment, what I realized was I thought I was superior. I went to church every day. I went to church every time the doors were open. I homeschooled my kids. I was really religious. And I did all things properly, while she, as the younger, often didn't. And I thought I was superior to her. And when God confronted me about that and I was able to acknowledge it and admit it, it broke my heart because I had been really ugly to her. I didn't know that I was, but the relationship issues were really my own. And so when I acknowledged that, I dealt with it for a little while, and then I called her up and I tried my very best to be as soft and gentle and loving to her as I possibly could. And you know, it was very interesting. With that one phone call, everything changed. And once I realized that the issue really was me, everything really began to get better. And so that is one of the lessons I think we can learn from Cain, is that we really need to look at ourselves. We want to project our anger on other people and we want them to be at fault. But the truth is, a lot of times, the woundedness drives the jealousy and the anger and the superiority that we project onto other people. One of the things that we learn through the New Testament is we get more information about what was really going on with Cain and Abel. For instance, in the book of Hebrews, this is called the Hall of Fame of Faith, and Abel is actually listed first, he and Cain. By faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts. And through it, he being dead still speaks. And so what we see is part of what probably was the issue with Cain's offering was that it lacked faith in some way. And that almost bears out if you think about the fact that God requests and desires our offerings to be a free will offering, first of all, but secondly, that he really wants us to believe that we can give him the very best that we have and that he will take care of it. And so whatever was going on with Cain and the difference there in their offerings, we can see that it had something to do with faith. But one of the other things that I really like about how the New Testament sort of picks up this story and explains it a little more is how Jesus picks it up and he offers us a lesson. And the rest of the New Testament actually does the same thing. We've been talking here about brothers or siblings, but it's interesting that the New Testament sort of picks it up as church family. So not only do we really need to inspect our relationships with our close family members and maybe even some of our extended family members, but also our church family is very important. And we see that Jesus really speaks to this in the Sermon on the Mount. In chapter 5 of Matthew, he says, "You have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not murder,' and whoever murders will be in danger of the judgment. But I say to you that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whoever says to his brother, 'Raca,' which means idiot, shall be in danger of the council," meaning the Sanhedrin council, meaning they would take you would be taken to court, like the Sanhedrin court, the religious court of that time. "But whoever says 'you fool' shall be in danger of hellfire." Now that's a stern warning. And then he says, "Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar and remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. Agree with your adversary quickly while you are on the way with him, lest your adversary deliver you to the judge, and the judge hand you over to the officer, and you be thrown into prison. Assuredly, I say to you, you will by no means get out of there until you have paid the very last penny." And so what Jesus is doing is he's not just speaking about siblings. He's talking even about extended relationships within our religious communities. And sometimes that is harder to deal with than even our siblings, because, you know, families are messy and we expect that. And in the end, typically, whether we have an issue with each other in our families or not, don't let anybody else mess with us, right? But it's a much easier thing to call a brother and sister in Christ an idiot and cherish that anger against him or her in our hearts. And Jesus says, you better be very careful about that. And so he sort of brings this anger issue even closer to home for us, where we don't get away with it, period. He wants us to really deal with whatever is causing our anger with one another. And that mantra is actually picked up once more in the book of John. It's actually, we call these little Johns because these are the letters of John. And he also speaks about Cain and Abel. He says, "In this, the children of God and the children of the devil are manifest. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is he who does not love his brother." He's speaking here in terms of the church. "For this is the message that you have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another, not as Cain, who was of the wicked one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his works were evil and his brothers were righteous." And so there again, we see that the relationships, even in the church, are very, very important to God, and that we don't get away with cherishing that anger toward one another, whether it's in our own family or in our church family. I actually experienced this myself in a rather strong way, probably the strongest way that I've ever experienced anger against a church brother or sister. But as a non-Catholic, we had several church splits. And the first one didn't bother me so much. I didn't really know what was going on. I was in my early 20s. But the second one, it was the same people who had split the church the first time. Now we had a new pastor, same issues, personality and temperament, that's all it was. But they rose up against our pastor and they split our church. And because I have spent my entire adult life learning how to submit to proper authority, it made me very angry that God did not poof them. And in fact, I went to him about that and I was complaining and I was angry with God, really, because he wasn't doing anything to them. And I even said to him, "You've corrected me about this over and over and over again. And yet here these people are in our church, splitting the church, rebellion, the same things that I have been in trouble for, and you haven't said a thing to them. You know, this is the second time they've done it." And he really began to speak to me about I was really not just angry. I was enraged with them because of what they had done to our pastor. And I loved him very much, and I still do. We're actually still in touch with him, even though now we're Catholic. But he was good to me. He gave me a co-ed class, his own, actually, in a denomination that women didn't do that kind of thing. So he affirmed my gifts, and he was a father figure to me in a relationship area that I was not too good at. And so I loved him very much, and I was very angry at these people. And I spoke to God about it, you know, because at that point I had learned that he really wants to speak to us about our anger and our issues, and even when it has to do with other people. But because these were church members, it was a little more difficult for me. And I asked God, I said, why haven't you done something about that? And he brought to mind the same conversation that he had with James and John when he called them the sons of thunder, and because they wanted him to poof some people in another city because they weren't accepting Jesus. So I thought that was kind of interesting. But he led me to a passage in Joshua. Now, I would not have considered them necessarily my personal enemy, but they felt like enemies because I was so angry at them and what they had done to this family that I loved very much. In fact, not just me, but half the church loved them that much. And to see all the devastation that they went through, it made me really, really angry. And so I went to him and I said, "I can't believe that you're not going to do anything about it." And it hurt me a lot. And this is what he said. I'm in Joshua chapter 5, verse 13. "And it came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho, he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, a man stood opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went to him and said, 'Are you for us or for our adversary?' And so he said, 'No.'" Isn't that interesting? So he didn't actually answer his question at all. Are you for me or my enemy? That's the real question there. Who are you really for? Me or these people who have split the church? The pastor or the people who are in sin? Who are you really for? And he said plainly, "No, I'm not for you or your enemy. I love you both." And with some other things that happened during that time that I'll share in further shows in the series, I came to realize that God doesn't pick sides, especially in his church where we are brothers and sisters, Christian brothers and sisters. And so when we think about Cain and Abel and we look at Cain's anger, which was really toward God more than Abel, because God did not approve his offering. But rather than dealing with that and admitting his error and his lack of faith in his offering, instead he let that anger get the best of him. And that's what we really have to guard against, whether it's in our immediate family with our siblings, or whether it's in the church family with our brothers and sisters in Christ. Even if they're in different denominations, we have to be very, very careful about cherishing anger in our hearts toward our brothers and sisters. That's the real lesson of Cain. We get puffed up with pride, we think we're superior, and we cherish that anger until it turns into something even uglier. And God has said to us through his word today, be very careful about that. Why are you really angry? And let's have a dialogue about that in prayer. And dear one, that's what he really wants, and that's what the sacraments are for and confession is for. So I hope you'll join me throughout the series. We're going to look at several people who were angry. We're going to look at Esau and his perfectionism and presumption. We'll look at Moses. Moses had a real anger problem. He tore up the Ten Commandments, the tablets. He threw them down and broke those. We'll look at Balaam and Haman and Elijah and Saul and David. What do we do when we're in ministry and we get angry at the people that we're serving, or they are angry at us? And Jonah and the prodigal son. We'll actually look at the prodigal God, but the prodigal son. And Judas and Paul, we're going to look at all of those. So I pray that you'll join me. Thank you for being with me in the series. I pray to see you again next week. And this is Sonia Corbett, the Bible Study Evangelista, signing off until next week.
If you love having Bible study in your pocket, you can become a friend of the show. Click on the yellow friend of the show button on BibleStudyEvangelista.com and become a supporter of any amount and any frequency.
Thank you for listening to the Bible Study Evangelista show. Find out more at BibleStudyEvangelista.com.